LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. I'm Ray Brewer alongside my two favorite colleagues, Case Kiefer, Ryan Green, also my only two colleagues, talking all kinds of sports today on LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Love following the Jazz Lounge. That last song, actually, my favorite. I love that. It was rocking in here. Felt like I was at a nightclub.
You know what?
Anyway, before we get on to the debacle,
Brewer,
Ryan,
you were there
for UNLV
hold
football.
On, hold on.
Oh, my God. Who knows what's going on there? Embarrassed by UNR yet again.
Hey.
what are you guys looking at me for?
Oh, I guess you can't hear me then.
Obviously, he can't hear you because
I'm talking over you, trying to get you to shut up for like
Green was talking the entire time, and you were just yelling over him, pretending that you didn't hear.
I was saying that last Jazz song would be 10 times better.
Go ahead. You guys talk until I hear something.
Stop! Stop talking! I lost my train of thought. All right, the whole time, all I'm trying to say is we need to get rid of the crappy intro song. Again.
Really? I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, we have to say that every week. We could have just gone. We could have just started
up
that Jazz song again.
Steve, it is your choice. Something else next week.
Was that? So I totally talked over you the whole time?
Yeah, about 25 seconds worth.
Was I really good?
Because I really thought you were just being bullheaded or something.
No, no. Okay. I was like, I'm talking right now. You're not. End of it. Is it this whole microphone thing? I'm a wordsmith. I'm good with words. Technically, you know, I'm not going to go plug in your cable TV or anything.
Well, that's what happens when I get shoved over to the annex every week.
Yeah. Anyways, I had a little anecdote I was going to tell you guys about. You know, UNLV, they lost to Reno, embarrassing, seventh straight time. And I was telling you guys in the newsroom at the Sun about a quote I read that kind of really got under my skin a little bit. It was a UNR player saying, you know, UNLV wouldn't know what the cannon looked like if it was painted red, and that UNLV has no history and tradition, and we have all the tradition, and this is the number one game for us. And that's kind of been irking at me. Then I go into the union, the student union, before I come to do the show. I'm going to get a coffee, and there's a kid walking through the union with a Duke hat on. I'm like, do you see that at any other school?
Yes.
Sure.
You do?
Yes, definitely.
College campuses are melting pots.
This is exactly like at KU, every once in a while you'd see someone with a Duke hat, and there would be some guy like you who goes, I cannot believe that you would wear a Duke hat on this campus. And yeah, it would be ridiculous, and everyone would look at the guy and not want to call him out. But luckily for you, I will call you out and tell you who cares.
You know what, though?
Seriously, who cares?
Yeah, I'm not going to make a big deal. Dude, there's 20,000 kids on a campus. You expect all of them to be from Vegas and born and raised diehards?
Well, no, but I mean, UNLV basketball's like the only show in this city. It's the marquee program of the campus. And Duke,
not if you don't care about sports.
And the kids, when Duke beat them, the kids that are in school right now aren't even alive.
Well, yeah, but clearly this kid cares about sports. He's not just wearing a Duke hat because it looks good.
Okay, anyway.
Back to the Reno game.
The quote that you were mentioning, you know what? I don't really blame the kid for saying that because it's been so long since UNLV's had that thing. The last time UNLV had that thing, the kid was probably in, what, 10th grade?
Who knows? He might have been like the kid at the union.
What are you guys giggling about over there?
They keep playing with my levels. I can't hear anything now.
I was trying to change my level, and I accidentally took down Brewers.
Got a hot mic.
So he was about to interrupt you again, probably, and it would have been my fault this time.
Anyways, you're right. It's been 7 years. The kid, you know, ninth grader, when he the last time UNLV won the game. Sanford didn't win the Cannon game, right, Green?
Never. So they haven't won it since John Robinson's last year, 2004.
Probably enough said. And
back when you were here on campus.
Yeah, yeah. Not only did they lose this year, they were kind of humiliated. One complete pass. It came in the fourth quarter, beaten in every phase of the game. And I guess, you know, for me, they had their chances to win, and they couldn't capitalize. You know, five turnovers they forced Reno into, and Ryan, they just couldn't capitalize, and it was insult to injury with the way they performed.
Sadly, their chances to win went by the wayside in the first quarter, but they did have them. They had, maybe not to win, but they had chances to gain control of that game. You know, I had a stat at the end of my story where UNLV under Bobby Houck is 0-10 in road games, having lost those games by an average margin of 36.6. First two possessions of the game for Reno, they turned them over both times. You know, the first time it was turned over near midfield, UNLV goes three and out, big deal. But the second one, it's turned over at the 16-yard line. UNLV gets the ball in the red zone, and three plays later turns it over. It's just, at that point, I think me and the guys from the RJ up in the press box just looked at each other and said, you know what, they're not going to win this game. No matter how strong the defense was for the next really quarter, the levy didn't break until midway through the second quarter, but you never got the feeling after then that UNLV was going to have much of a shot.
Not that they're gangbusters at home, but are they doing something different on the road, or is it just when you're not good, you can't win on the road, period?
Well, they need something to give them confidence on the road. And, you know, this was, that those turnovers were really the first time we've seen this team have something to be positive about early in a game on the road, because in those 10 road games under Houck, they've never had a lead. And not only that, I mean, think about it. They're not even just not scoring first. They're not scoring second. They're not scoring third. And in this game, it was 3-0 until midway in the second quarter. That's a lot of time to do something. There were 23 minutes in that game where they were within 3 points or less, or it was tied. So that's 23 minutes that just completely went by the wayside and were wasted.
And I think for me, I obviously I was at home. You were there. I was watching the game, and after the first turnover, you're right, no big deal, 3-and-out, they punt. But then they get that second turnover, and they're, I think, what, at the 30, give or take?
Mm-hmm.
And Herring has Payne open in the end zone, and...
I don't even know that he was open. They threw the fade route, and honestly, the kid from Reno, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone defend that ball, that route, like that Fry kid from Reno did. You know, a lot of credit goes to him, but you're right. I mean, they've just been a disaster in the red zone of late.
It seems like whenever a play's designed for Philip Payne, since he's the best player offensively, mm-hmm. and he's had so much success before, especially on the fade route, that whoever the quarterback is, which it's not Herring anymore, we'll get to that, it seems like you want to force it to get there, thinking that if you – I don't know, me thinking that I'm thinking that I'm a quarterback, but thinking that if you don't get it there all the way, Philip will do the rest and somehow come up with the great catch. And they just forced it. And it's – as soon as that pick happened, you were right, the kind of the roof caved in and you knew the game was over.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a place where the atmosphere was just juiced. You know, the place was almost sold out. It looked like it probably was sold out, and there were maybe just about 2,000 no-shows. You know, great atmosphere as their home opener. Their fans had to wait 6 weeks for a first home game. And they had a chance to really neutralize the crowd. But I'll tell you what, that pick happens right in front of an amped student section. And the whole place was going nuts after that. And then, you know, I mentioned the levee breaking midway through the second quarter. That was when Reno takes over at their own 10. And on a, you know, they turn a 10-yard hitch route into a 90-yard touchdown play. And at that point, it, you know, this is not a team that's built to play from behind, especially on the road.
Yeah, one thing leads to another. Herring completes one pass for 8 yards, and that's just an awful stat. Of all the bad things that have gone wrong this year, the three interception returns for a touchdown and a double-digit loss to Southern Utah, mm-hmm. you know, being blown out by Wisconsin to open the season, while it wasn't that bad, I guess, because it was Wisconsin.
And they actually looked respectable that night.
I was about to say, the Wisconsin game, that almost has to be like a positive of this season with the way it's turned out.
Highlights,
you know,
it's a highlight.
You know what's sad? That's their second best performance this year.
Yeah, I'd say so, definitely. I agree with that.
You know, and well, I mean, every team UNLV plays, it seems like their players are – just having career days. You know, the Washington State fourth string quarterback threw for, you know, more touchdowns than he had entering it for his career. Well,
it's funny, we were saying up in the press box, it seems like every week when we're on the road somewhere, the press box PA announcer is saying, and that so-and-so sets a new career high, or that sets a new program. I mean, every week.
Yeah, I guess if you look at some of the worst teams in college football right now, and you hate to say UNLV's in that group, but they clearly are.
Yeah.
You guys, Case, it's New Mexico, UNLV, and
there's got to be Akron maybe, or a couple other MAC teams.
Memphis,
I think Akron
Memphis
still wins
up
Memphis,
there.
Definitely. I think UNLV would beat Memphis, so they got that going for
them. I think they could definitely beat Memphis.
Yeah.
At
they
Memphis?
Might beat Akron. Yeah, Memphis.
I think they'd win at Memphis,
yeah.
Honestly.
Let's just say Memphis does not have the toughest home atmosphere. I actually watched a Memphis game 2 weeks ago because the degenerate I am, I bet SMU in that game, and I watched the whole thing, and there were maybe like 5,000 people there.
In other news, Memphis, my birthplace, I don't know, I kind of felt proud about this. Probably proud wasn't the right word, but has moved up to the second most dangerous city in America, I saw on the news, behind Detroit, or as a former colleague calls it, the D.
Oh, boy.
So after you left Memphis, it just went downhill, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just... It's just never been the same. I mean, I guess they kind of made the national championship in basketball one of those years, but not really now because it's not in the record books. So I guess that never really happened either.
Yeah, I like totally transgressing here before we get back on topic, but Green's on Twitter. He's probably the best tweeter I know, Ryan M. Green with an E on the end if you want to follow him. But
thank you, sir.
Yeah, make sure you have that E too, because there is another Ryan M. Green on
is
Twitter
really?
Without the E. Yeah, I saw his description once. I was trying to find your Twitter. I think I was trying to find like how UNLV was doing, and I found some guy, and I clicked on him accidentally, and it was like, I love my life, and I love to drink. So,
so it's,
if you get
so
to that, it's
so
not
exactly.
our Ryan Green.
It's my Twitter doppelganger.
Yeah, your Twitter,
wow.
Exactly.
You need to change yours to the official Twitter account of Ryan M. Green.
Interesting.
But
I need to get it verified.
Do you follow Shabazz? Obviously, we all follow Shabazz Muhammad on Twitter, the top recruit from Gorman, who everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed his new Twitter photo?
No.
It's him and D. Rose sitting together on the bench.
Oh,
somewhere.
I did see that. I did see
wow,
that.
Wow, I didn't see that. I missed that.
I noticed the little things. You know, obviously, former Memphis coach John Calipari is at Kentucky. Just one plus one, putting it together. We could talk basketball recruiting.
Next week.
Ryan Green, how does UNLV fix its problems? I know they took a step to what they think could be a small solution earlier today.
Well, they had to do something, plain and simple, after last weekend. And, you know, if you look at the game on paper, where they failed the most, obviously, was in the passing game. They couldn't move the ball through the air. So they've named Sean Riley, junior college quarterback, Ray's favorite quarterback on the roster, as their starter for this Saturday at Wyoming. You know, look, I don't think this is going to be the last game Caleb Herring has started all year. I do have a feeling he'll be back at some point. But, you know, look, the kid is just he had a terrible outing against Southern Utah, and after having 2 weeks to get ready for Reno, it just got worse.
And I think right now the kid the change – I don't like Riley as a quarterback. I don't think he has the leadership skills. I'm not sold on him. I'm not sold on any athlete that has to go to a JC for non-academic reasons.
How many times you watched him?
Enough, Green. Okay.
You got to give the kid a chance, dude.
I'm going to give the kid a chance, no doubt about it. But here's my thing. A change needed to be made because Herring, while he might have the physical tools and while he's played good against Wisconsin and Hawaii, he just mentally right now is not the guy to start against Wyoming. You can't play that bad in back-to-back games and go in there with any kind of confidence case to do anything except fail.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I certainly don't see anything wrong with the change, seeing if someone else can spark you. But I will say, here's my great analysis for the week. I'm not expecting too much out of Riley, and this is why. Because you are the token UNLV optimist, always looking at the bright side, always saying why it's going to be good. And today, when you heard Riley was going to be the starter, you about exploded in our office talking about how it's such a bad move. So therefore, if you're saying that, I don't really see it turning out well.
I come back to the office from the press conference, and I say to Ray, who hadn't seen the tweet, I said, your boy's starting at quarterback. He goes, who, Barnhill? I said, no. He goes, Sherry? No. Well, who else? I'm running out of names. So, I mean, look, the kid, he deserves a shot. I think, you know, they brought him here from a junior college under the premise that he was going to get a chance to compete for a chance to play. You know, he's done everything you've asked. He had a little bit of a tough fall camp, but he had his moments. You know, what do you have to lose at this point? I think Bobby Houck even kind of hinted today, you know, without saying it, I mean, what are you really playing for now at this point in the year?
Well, I'll be the optimist that I am. It is, after all, your first league game.
It's not like you got a chance to win the league.
Well, if you have that attitude, you're not going to win the league.
Well, you don't. Because Boise is there, because TCU is there, because San Diego State's there, because Air Force is there. Shall I continue?
Well, no, I totally understand who makes up the league, but what I'm saying is that this is the second season. This got you ready for league play. Shouldn't you have that attitude that we're going to go smack them in the mouth and win this thing?
Here's the thing. Kids aren't dumb, and these kids know the situation for what it is. They know that the program is probably, you know, still a year away. You know, look, they understand these things. And I think a lot of them, you know, not have made peace with it, but I think they all kind of have an understanding that, you know, this year it's playing for pride now. And, you know, you got to try some things to try and get some of that pride back, because I don't know how much of it there is right now.
Steve, do you remember this song? Ain't nobody gonna take my pride. Can't nobody hold
that will
me.
Not be our new intro music, by the
no,
way.
No, that won't work?
No.
Do you know that?
Who's you are it? Not picking it.
Come on. You don't like my music taste?
No, I don't.
Kiefer, brack me up. I got some good taste.
I mean, I guess you don't have horrible taste. I've heard of worse taste.
Who sings that song?
Wow, thanks for leaving me in the wind, Kiefer.
Nope.
We spent like half of the last show when you weren't here just ripping your taste in music.
Well, yeah.
Now he's turning code
well,
on.
Well, it's just kind of hard to insult it, because every song Brewer has ever heard is like... I think he's only heard like 60 songs ever. You know what I mean?
My iPod's got like a dozen songs on there. So I just take songs.
As long as you don't like Nickelback. You don't listen to Nickelback,
no,
do you?
But I have seen them in concert.
Yikes.
With Three Doors Down at the Hunch Ridge. You know that place? Little alternative place. Back in 2000 when both weren't too popular.
Did they open with Kryptonite?
I'll tell you a story offline about that song. That's a good tune. You like that. Everybody likes that song. Could that be our theme music?
It would be an improvement. I would say but it would be an improvement.
Oh, you guys are killing me. Before we change gears out of UNLV football, predictions for this week. They play Wyoming. After the Hawaii victory, when they were 1-2 and they had that easy game with Southern Utah on a bye week against a UNR team that looked maybe like UNLV could compete against them for the first time ever, I thought that they had a chance to beat Wyoming and that they could be looking at a positive record.
I'll tell you what. I don't offer gambling advice on this show very often, but if you can go get the 13.5 points, lay them. I'm saying lay the 13.5 points with Wyoming.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard when a team's been – I mean, it seems like if you're ever going to back UNLV from a betting perspective, you don't want to do it on the road.
It's just you got to go with the trends. I mean, they lose road games by an average of 37 points. And, you know, look, what does it say about UNLV that they are getting 14 points against a team that this weekend lost 63-19 against another one-win team?
And here's my logic. I totally agree with you. I think they're going to get absolutely blown out. But
I don't think it'll be as bad as Reno.
Well, here's the deal. I think because I've been so anti-Sean Riley that because of that...
He's going to throw for three bills.
Yeah, it's going to bite me in the rear, and he's going to lead UNLV to victory.
Okay.
I just think that I have this weird feeling that the Sean Riley era continues and somehow he's going to be the QB the next year and a half.
That's analysis that you can't get anywhere else other than Las Vegas.
Here's the thing. The one area I'll agree with you in, and then we can switch topics. I do possibly agree with you because five games that this team has played, I have guessed wrong on which team was going to show up all five times. And the latest one was I thought they were going to compete this weekend at Reno.
All right,
ladies, come on.
Did you see the Texas final?
Yeah, I did, and that's why I'm smiling and pumping my fist.
What if you had the under 9 and they get a walk-off granny to win it?
That's why you don't gamble, kids.
Yes.
7-3 Rangers, to fill anyone in that might be driving and not have seen the final score. The Rangers go up two games to none.
Walk-off salami.
Anyways, back. Sorry to interrupt you and so inconsiderately, Ryan.
That's okay.
So, Case, your prediction on the game? We think it's going to be a blowout by Green. I think Riley's going to rally the troops.
I got Wyoming. I'll say by something like 42-20, Wyoming.
UNLV's going to score 20 points.
Yeah, Because Wyoming's defense is pretty terrible.
Just like I said, that great analysis that you gave about Riley, that he's going to have a huge game because you're saying he's not. I mean, that just swayed me, saying that you're going to be able to score.
Before we go to UFC, you were at that big card this weekend. Is Cornette playing Saturday?
Looks like he probably will. He's still listed atop the depth chart. Hurt his hip early in the game Saturday. He'll likely be back.
All right. All right. Well, folks, for all your UNLV coverage, Ryan's done a great job, LasVegasSun.com. The Sean Riley era begins officially Saturday. He, by the way, is off to all media until after the game. Don't want to get him too much. He can't handle the pressure of a few questions from Ryan and I. Who knows how he'll do against that Wyoming blitz.
Yeah.
Case was at the UFC this weekend in Houston. Our boy, Gray Maynard, the Vegas local, came up short in his bid to bring a belt back to Sin City. Case was there. Dana White, the UFC president, afterwards calls Frankie Edgar the second to best fighter in the UFC. I thought that was
behind Tito Ortiz.
That's the official Ray Brewer rankings. I think that's a little high. I know he looked great beating Maynard, but second best in the whole organization?
Yeah, I think it's a little high, too. What are you saying? He's the second best pound for pound, and he does kind of have a – his argument makes a little bit of sense because he says if you look at what pound for pound means, it's that Frankie Edgar should not be fighting at 155 pounds. He's so tiny, he should be fighting at 145. I mean, the guy, before his training camp, Frankie Edgar weighed about 162 and cut down to 155. Maynard weighed about 190. And got down to 155. So he's saying that Frankie Edgar's beating up all these bigger guys, and that's why he should be number two, which I guess is kind of a good point that he's beating up bigger guys, but I still wouldn't say he's the second best ever. Gray Maynard got him in trouble again, really beat him up in the first round, but Edgar just kind of used his quickness to frustrate Gray the rest of the way and knocked him out with a really nice uppercut followed by a right hand right to the face and kind of shocking ending to a really good card, Frankie Edgar taking out Gray Maynard.
See, entering the card, though, I don't even think Edgar would have been in my top 10.
Your top 10? He's the lightweight champion. You wouldn't put him in the top 10?
I mean, you know me. I have the I don't know UFC that well rankings, but he's not one of the quick – you know, tell me your top fighters in the UFC. I go with like St. Pierre, Velasquez, guys who bigger names that are kicking butt.
Are we talking popularity or are we talking talent? Because I think no one would argue in talent he wasn't in the top 10. I think both these guys are in the top 10 talent-wise. But popularity-wise, I mean, Edgar's still a relatively new champion. Maynard, until recently, was really kind of seen as more of a boring fighter, just a wrestler. So I think talent-wise, they're both in the top 10, but popularity-wise, I mean, neither of them might be in the top 15, and that might have changed now after this rivalry. I mean, these two guys are kind of going to be linked for the rest of their careers for what we've seen these last two fights with the draw in January and now Edgar winning here to finish things up in October. But, yeah, I mean, I think Frankie Edgar probably a top five fighter in the world. I wouldn't quite put him at number two yet, though.
And obviously a great card, and that was a great fight, but maybe not the best fight on the card. I don't know. I'm just reading into it.
See, I actually probably would have said it was the best fight on the card. I enjoyed it the most. Of course, if you aren't too familiar with the UFC, what they do for every fight card is they have a fight of the night bonus, where two guys that have the best fight get some extra cash. It was $75,000. On Saturday night, and they gave it to Leonard Garcia and Nam Phan, two featherweights who really just, I mean, went out there, looked each other in the face, and just swung for the fences, hit each other as hard as they could, which for some people, I mean, is absolutely the best thing. You probably would have given it fight of the night because I know what you look for in UFC, and that's kind of your thing. That's not an insult, I'm just saying. But I thought Maynard Edgar was just, I mean, it had everything. It had, you know, Maynard just about finishing him again. It had Edgar kind of regaining his bearings, coming back. So I thought it was a great fight. I thought it was the best fight on the card. But certainly some other ones you could argue.
Had all the drama that you
definitely had the drama.
So I guess that's half the battle. I mean, to each his own in any sport, but for a sport where people are still getting their acquired taste for certain styles, another great weekend. I will say that last week on the show, Ryan, mm-hmm. I you know, we do our UFC predictions, And we got Case Kiefer over here, the expert who could tell you who fought on UFC 87.
Who'd you guess right on this week?
Everybody. I had them all.
I got he took Green.
Did you like
you will appreciate
guess?
This, Green. Okay. He took Joe Lozon over Melvin Gillard. Gillard closed as a 6-1 favorite. So now Ray Brewer has taken Tito Ortiz and Joe
Lozon.
Brewer,
I
want to
know what your logic was behind that pick.
Oh, this was easy. The guy I picked against had a record of like 58-6 going into the fight. I said, Kiefer, there's no way he could keep this up. The tread's got to be coming off the tires. That's a lot of rounds to take a beating on.
He declared Melvin Gillard, I think, over the hill at 28 years old.
His birth certificate might be 28, but he's fought the fights of a 45-year-old.
Those Louisiana birth certificates, they're just... I mean, it's like Cuba down in Louisiana.
It's not even America.
You guys are laughing at the logic, but who won?
No,
I
you're right.
Right.
Hey, I'm giving you credit. You picked, I think, if you had a guy that knows UFC really well, go around and you say the five biggest upsets this year, absolutely for sure, 100%. Two of the ones that are going to be in there are Lozon over Gillard and Tito over Bader, and you picked both of them. Unfortunately, you only profited probably about $50 combined.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm swinging for the fences on these upsets. I'm telling you.
Put some guts behind your picks then.
Green.
You swung for the fences on a 6-1 underdog or 4-1 underdog.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's not like every fight I'm saying, okay, who's the biggest underdog? Okay, that's who I like, guys. It just happens to be my analysis of the fight leads me to pick a certain fighter, just like my analysis of everything I do.
I'll tell you what, Brewer.
Yes, sir.
On the next UFC fight card, we are changing the intro music next week, but if you pick every fight on the main card correctly, you can keep it at Born to be Wild for the rest of eternity. We'll move it back, and you can keep it there for the rest of eternity.
I like it.
Listen, I wasn't the only one who picked Born to be Wild.
Deal extended?
Well, yeah, deal extended. I mean, how many fights are on a card?
Main card, 5.
5.
So all I got to do is go 5-0?
5-0. Just like you do every Sunday. Come on.
Well, I'm thinking 5-0. I could do that.
I should also say, while we're giving Brewer credit for picking the UFC, right, he also said, going into what I think, there was another title fight on the card. Probably won't talk about it, but Jose Aldo won a unanimous decision over Kenny Florian. But what I think was the second most intriguing fight, Chael Sonnen versus Brian Stann, two great middleweights. Sonnen, kind of the second best guy in the world. Stann really rising quickly this year. Anyway, though, Brewer said, what price can I get Stan at? And I said, about, 2-1. He's about 200, 180. He goes, that's not near enough. I need more money than that. I think he was right because Chael Sonnen just absolutely dominated. I think Stan hit him with one punch.
What was
so
the
Brewer
price on
really,
Sonnen?
I think 240 maybe, okay. 250. Right. But Brewer said, I think there's some value on Chael here. Stan hasn't fought a guy like him. And look at what he does. So he's not only giving the dogs, he's giving the favorites too.
Should start selling these 1-800 UFC picks.
Actually, 1-800 bets off.
Bets off. Isn't that the gambling addiction hotline number? I can't believe you guys would say that. Nonetheless, UFC has a 2-week break, and then they're here for UFC October 29th. I don't even know who's on that card, I'll be honest with you.
George St. Pierre,
oh,
probably
man.
The most famous fighter in the UFC right now. He's fighting Carlos Condit and also Nick Diaz and BJ Penn in what should be probably the most entertaining fight on the card. So, yeah, that's in Las Vegas at Mandalay Bay. It sold out in about 30 minutes when the tickets went on sale.
Crazy
so,
Canadians.
Yeah, so a lot of people will be in town for that. And so you got some time to think about it, Brewer, to break down those matchups.
I mean, I'm still flustered about the Sean Riley thing at quarterback, but life goes on, I guess. LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. For Ryan Green, Case Kiefer, I'm Ray Brewer. We'll talk to y'all next week. Head out on the highway, looking for adventure. And whatever.